Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Coming up on today's edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast, full ride, Matt Green, all things college football, tackled the SEC West today and our season review series as we continue on each week here on the Chase Thomas Podcast. Oh yeah, LSU, Alabama, Arkansas, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Auburn, Texas A&M, go back through all their seasons, best game, most underrated, most overrated player, who's under the most pressure going into 2023 college football season, all that and more coming up with Pelley University of North Georgia alumni Matt Green. So stick around for that.
I'd like to plug the Chase Thomas Podcast. Listen to Chase Thomas. You'll be a smarter sports fan and obviously a much better human being.
Matt Chernoff from 680 The Fan's Chuck and Chernoff Show here. And I want to say thanks for listening to today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, and all your favorite podcast apps. Chase Thomas went to Parkview in North Georgia. He's a local Atlanta kid, and he won't let the Luka versus Trey thing go. He interned with us back in the day, and you'll always remember him. Anyway, definitely go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com, where you can find all of Chase's previous episodes, all of his articles, and do him a solid. Leave him a rating and review if you're an Apple Podcast listener. Reminder to listen to our show, Chuck and Chernoff, Monday through Friday, 3 to 7 on 680 The Fan, and subscribe to my podcast as well. Welcome to Matlanta, wherever you get your podcasts.
Chase Thomas Podcast. The Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee. I have not said that in a couple days. It's been almost a week, Matt Green, since I recorded my last pod. It was Thursday. Folks are listening to this on Thursday morning, so nearly a full week in between podcasts. We didn't do our normal Sunday. You texted me, and I was like, I think at the moment when you were texting me, I was somewhere deep in the mountains, and I was like, I don't think we're going to be doing any podcasting where I'm at. I don't think I'm going to have the internet to do that. But Matt Green, Pelley University of North Georgia alumni, is here as he is at this time every week. Matt, good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening, sir. Yeah, we went and saw Sam Morril at the Tabernacle on Sunday night. So one of my favorite comedians these days. He was really funny. But yeah, I didn't even think to hit you up. I was like, oh yeah, I'm definitely not gonna be available on Sunday. But yeah, you were busy getting away, enjoying nature.
I love enjoying nature. My wife and I, it's a big thing. Did some fishing. Did some cowboy stuff, some cowboy shit, Matt Green. You know me, Chase Thomas, doing all that sort of thing, riding some horses, as
riding
one does.
Riding horses. Mm-hmm. I see you, man.
Hey, I'm built different.
I think that's what people think when they think Chase Thomas. They think rugged, riding horses. You know, built different. I think that's how people describe Chase Thomas.
Mm-hmm. How would they have described
it? That's how I do, at least.
I was going to say. I would hope so. I would hope so. Yeah, no, it was good. But it is weird. It's something I talk about with my wife where I'm like, by Wednesday, I'm antsy, man. Like, it's just, me not being productive and doing this, and when people, like, it's never good when people are like, how are you doing with, like, this much time in between, like, other people reaching out and sending me something about, like, it's been like 5 days, are you good, like, are you okay, like, it's like an SOS type deal, where, and coming into the week, they're like, are you gonna be able to, like, not work for, like, 5 days, is that gonna be on the docket for you? It's hard, man. Like, it really is hard for me to not do any kind of potting during the week. It was tough. I won't lie. It's such a nerdy thing to be like, yeah, it was tough for me not to to work and do the pod and do some research and prep and chop up videos, create social content, all that. I felt like I was antsy, man. I was getting anxious.
Yeah, I could see that. I know how you love to hear yourself talk. So
I don't think it's that.
But no, I'm just messing with you. But yeah, I could definitely understand that, especially just someone who's hustling like you are every day, man. I can understand.
Hey, us rugged mountain men, we got a lot on our plates. We got to go attack the day, Matt Green. Don't forget, folks, you can check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/ChaseThomasPodcast. Like and subscribe. You can watch Matt and myself, like, if you are right now here on the YouTube page. Make sure you hit that like and subscribe button. It helps other people find the show, helps this very show continue to grow. 5-star rating, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all that good stuff. If that is how you are listening and you have not already done so, make sure, as always, to email us. If you have any college football questions for Matt or myself, you can always email us that we can answer on the show. You can leave it also in the review at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. Follow Matt at Matt_Dub_Green. Follow myself at Chase_Thomas. Or follow the official Twitter page, twitter.com/@PodChaseThomas. There you go. Matt, Nigel the Nighthawk, has some stuff he was going to get into, drop off for us here on today's edition of The Full Ride. Because we have the SEC West, we did the SEC East last week on the program. That was a lot of fun revisiting what happened and where that side of the conference is going. Our last year with these two splits.
Speaking of the SEC East, before we get started with all this, I know it's been a while now, so you know, the wound isn't too fresh, but how are we feeling about another Rick Barnes basketball season? Didn't get past the Sweet 16. How are we feeling?
Look, they didn't have Zakai Ziegler, losing him for the season. Banged up. Julian Phillips, the 5-star freshman, was banged up, wasn't able to play much, and was just not really a factor late in the season. Had to constantly adjust. You look at the Final Four. Bama didn't make it. Kentucky didn't make it. Auburn didn't make it. Houston didn't make it. You go up and down the list. It's just that kind of year, man. Like, no number one seeds made it. Like, if things had gone a little bit differently, then maybe I'd be a little more upset. But the team that Tennessee lost to ended up making the Final Four anyway in FAU. They should have won the game. They were up late. Getting out rebounded the way they did with their size advantage was not the best. But Tennessee, the offense just was never going to be enough. Like, I didn't think they were going to win the title or anything like that. But I did think the way the bracket was shaping up with Purdue losing early, that, hey, there was a path. Marquette goes down early. That, okay, this is shaping up for the best defense in this side of the region to sneak through with just talent and size alone. But, you know, Rick Barnes is still probably the best Tennessee basketball coach in Tennessee history. And still recruiting extremely well.
Is he better than Bruce Pearl, though?
Yeah, because at this point, he's been here longer and been successful, and he's just solid. He's going to, like, he's a guaranteed NCAA tournament guy here. He gets the Sweet 16 with a group that got decimated by injuries to this point. I don't know. I think Barnes, by and large, just wins so many games, and it's tough to lose these, and folks love picking on his NCAA tournament resume and all that kind of thing, but I don't know. It's such a crapshoot, the NCAA tournament, and I think so many other programs would kill to be in the situation that Tennessee's in. And like I said, we're an everything school. We're not a win it all school. We're an everything school. So we're good at everything. And you just got to be in play. And Rick Barnes is, I never thought there would be like an exact equivalent to like Mark Richt at the college football or college basketball level. But Rick Barnes is absolutely the Mark Richt of college basketball, where it's like everybody likes him. He's the nicest dude. Every Rick Barnes story is just super, super positive. Everybody likes him. Like, it could be Kevin Durant. It could just be one of his old assistants. He leaves a positive impact on everyone he's around. And, you know, you pull for him. You hope it happens. But Tennessee's not like this university that has this strong path. They've never reached a Final Four. It's not like they have this Kentucky expectation here. So I think it's just you're happy with where things are. You want the offense to get better. It has to get better. That's something that has to be part of this offseason plan, is it can't just be the number one defense and hope that a 60th offense can get you through. You got to have a little bit more balance on both sides of the floor. But I don't know. There's a lot of programs around the country that would kill to be in the spot that Tennessee's in. And Rick Barnes is extremely consistent. You just kind of like the Mark Richt thing. You know this, where you hope you break through. You hope one of those, like the Aaron Murray play at the end of the game, where if that goes a different way and you get Notre Dame in the national championship game, Mark Richt gets a national title. He's viewed completely differently that after that.
Yeah, I think basketball, it's hard to make those comparisons. He definitely, I'm with you. They feel like the football basketball equivalent. The only difference is that basketball has this tournament at the end. Mm. It's like that's what, like maybe we think of Mark Richt as a Tom Izzo if there's an actual tournament and they're just good every year. And Michigan State seems to be one of those teams that, like, regardless of their seed, like, they're dangerous in the tournament. They go to the Final Four and they're like a 7 seed, that type of thing. But yeah, I definitely see the parallels there. Mm. Reading in between the lines of one thing you said, had things worked differently. I think you mean, had Alabama gone to the Final Four, you would feel worse. But since Alabama also didn't go to the Final Four, you're like, yeah, you know what? It could be better, but it's fine. The pretty good at everything school.
Do you know how many universities around the United States would kill to be pretty good at everything? A lot.
I will say,
folks.
Like, it's cool to be really good at everything, but when was the last national championship Tennessee won? I think I heard it was like 2009 was the last championship they won in like anything. Mm. And it's like, if that's the last one in anything, I didn't look it up. Just off the top of my head, I would bet you almost every school in the SEC has won a national title since 2009.
Well, women's basketball won in 2008, and then indoor track and field in 2009.
So that's the last one?
It might be the last one. Yeah, looks like that might be the last one.
Other than maybe, I don't know, Missouri? Did Arkansas, was Arkansas just really good in baseball? Did they win a national title a few years
back?
They
did win a national title.
They
years
did?
Back, yeah, they've won.
So I think Missouri might be the only other. So Tennessee, they're pretty good at everything, but the rest of the conference is winning national titles. You gotta start winning something.
I'm not gonna take this.
What happened to Tennessee women's basketball?
They made the Sweet 16 this year.
But I wasn't saying, like, I mean, I know they're not Pat Summitt good. I was like literally asking, like, what happened with that? Like, are they still a good program?
Yeah, they're still good.
It's just Dawn Staley's world now that everyone's living in.
I mean, Caitlin Clark's world, man. She's fun as hell. Like, just the Steph Curry of women's basketball.
Oh, this girl
right
for Iowa?
Yeah. Just electric. 49 points. Like, just a phenomenal shooter. Yeah, no. It's Dawn Staley and South Carolina are kind of the new age Pat Summitt in a lot of ways. You just can't dominate forever. It's like when you replace an iconic, just maybe the best coach the sport's ever seen. Just, it doesn't work like that. You don't just immediately transition and maintain that level of dominance. It's not realistic, and it shouldn't be expected. But it's like Tennessee just swept Texas A&M, big win over the weekend. Texas A&M, obviously top 25 team in D1 baseball, and then the lowly Georgia Bulldogs.
I don't know what A&M have they won any championships and anything. I don't know. I'd have to look them up. But
Just talking about positives with the University of Tennessee, because they're humongous weekend, Matt Green, this weekend at LSU, the best team in college baseball this year. Tennessee right there in the top 10, LSU number one overall, the Dogs nowhere to be found, men's basketball, men's baseball, just
Hey, but apparently every player that's been at Georgia in the last few years is a good player. Like, I don't know how this happens. Like, you got Sevier Wheeler goes to Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Was it Katie Johnson? That's his name at Auburn. Like, now there's another transfer that's going to be – he went somewhere, and then he's now going to Alabama. I forget his name. Like, that Tom Crean, that first recruiting class he had with Anthony Edwards. Mm. Like, apparently all of those guys are good enough to play big-time D1 basketball, yet Georgia was terrible when they had all of them. So who knows what's going on? But, dude, hey, they're out of the cellar in the SEC, and that's a big step up. They were like 12th place this year, 11th place. I'm not sure what they were, the seed they were at the tournament. But that's a huge difference between being all the way at the bottom, winning like two conference games. So, or did they win any? They may not have won any conference games, Crean's last year. They won like seven games or something that year.
Whatever you got to say, Matt Green. Whatever you got to get through these winter and spring months. I know you. I know Athens is pretty barren right now. Athens is it ghost town for
you? Get through those winter and spring months on Twitter, sir. Mm-hmm. It's just what do you have to say? Let me just post a GIF of Kirby Smart kissing the trophy. That's all. That's all I need to say in response.
I mean, you could say that, but it won't affect me as someone who enjoys everything school. Itis that I do have doesn't faze me. I get spring football practice, Nico in pads, this recruiting class. Now we get it all here on Rocky Top. Choose Tennessee 2024 recruits. Matt Green, there's a really interesting piece on SI.com about the defensive coordinator changes by Richard Johnson, great college football writer, also co-host of the Split Zone Duo, a very good college football podcast that folks should go check out if they're not already. He highlighted the biggest names and like the ones to watch with the carousel. And this is like, it's just hard to keep up with because like I even go through, because I'm just a huge dork, is like to memorize who's where. Like, I have to go back daily and double check who's where because I'll forget that guys are bouncing around. I couldn't imagine what it's like for just like the average college football fan who doesn't have to do this professionally, where it's like, oh, wait, who's where now? Okay, what? And that's just the nature of the beast at this point. But he compiled like the biggest, basically, defensive coordinator carousels, which is, I think, an talked about point for this particular cycle, because I think how these moves go could swing a lot of programs in a big way in 2023. So he had Alabama with Kevin Steele replacing Pete Golding. Pete Golding obviously was just getting ripped in kind of a similar way. It kind of reminded me of how Georgia fans and then later Florida fans felt about Todd Grantham for many years, where the numbers were like, he's fine. Like, he's not like this bad defensive coordinator. And then there's the third and Grantham jokes and all that. And it's like, he keeps getting picked up and people are still, Pete Golding just feels like the new version where Alabama's fans are like, no, you have to watch every Alabama game. You have to be involved. Like, you don't get it. You don't get why we really don't like Pete Golding.
I feel like Grantham was just like, he felt like such a retread by the end of it, you know, and he was at Louisville with Petrino. It's like, he had like, and Mississippi State and Florida with Mullen. So it's like he had a lot of different spots and they had a lot of good, like you said, like what a solid defenses, but it would, the third and Grantham jokes just became, you know, kind of perfect, honestly. Like that, it really summed him up perfectly. But with Pete Golding, it's really just like, okay, he's not Kirby Smart. Like, he's not Jeremy Pruitt. Mm-hmm. Like, two of the best defensive coordinators in recent history in college football. So it's like, oh, we have the 15th ranked defense in college football? What is this garbage? This is unacceptable. It feels like a different standard at Alabama more than anything. Like, I don't know that Pete Golding, but it's also like Pete Golding's going to have way better players. Well, would have had way better players at Alabama than he's going to have at Ole Miss. So you're going to see like truly what he's capable of doing, because we know what kind of talent Alabama had. We know basically no one in college football other than, you know, Georgia, Ohio State have the kind of talent that Alabama has. So, you know, we'll see what he is, but I wouldn't say we necessarily know that he's just like this kind of, you know, retread, like what his ceiling is, kind of like a Grantham. Like, you're not going to have a great defense. It's going to be super frustrating at times, but for the most part, you're going to have a pretty solid defense. And if you got dudes, then it'll be better. But you know that Ole Miss just doesn't have the dudes that Alabama does.
But it's
and
also
playing
like
a similar schedule, too.
Yeah, I mean, couldn't you see Pete Golding being like the DC at four different SEC schools in the next 10, 15 years total? Like, he doesn't end at Ole Miss, then he's at Mizzou in like 4 years, and then he's somehow at Florida in six. Like, it's just, I could see him following the Grantham path where he just bounces around a little bit. And with Chavis, maybe a little bit too. I feel like Chavis bounced around a lot among DC pools. But
he was one of those, it's like everyone wanted him. It's like this guy.
Well, I think
like
people want Pete Golding.
Guru. Like, Golding, I mean, that's a serious, you know, demotion in Alabama DC to Ole Miss DC. So it like there, we don't necessarily know. He left on his own, right? He didn't get fired. So, you know, he could have made a preemptive leap because he thought he was going to get fired. But I don't know. That's a pretty big drop off. Like Grantham was a guy who had NFL experience before getting to Georgia. And then it's like literally every job is like, slightly worse, slightly lower, slightly lower. But I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't know if we can necessarily say that about Golding just yet.
I also can only imagine what the vibe difference is like going from being just chewed out constantly for years under Saban to Lane Kiffin come to the SIP vibe in Oxford for Pete Golding. That had to play a role where it's like, I've won my titles. I've made some pretty good money. Yeah, Ole Miss is not like a title or bust school, but like we're going to win some games. The defense hasn't been great consistently under Lane. They have the offense figured out. Like Lane's a cool dude. I'm just going to have some fun.
And from that perspective, yeah, without a doubt, from that perspective, it's a huge opportunity because you have Alabama with the number four ranked defense in the country. It's like, okay, is it you? Is it Saban? Is it all the players? It's just Alabama. That's what they do. Is this what Pruitt kind of had set up before he came in? Yeah, you know. Like Ole Miss, we've seen how they've gotten scored on every year Kiffin's been there, basically. Like, so if he actually turns Ole Miss into a good defensive program, like that's definitely an opportunity to show what he's capable of and potentially be a future head coach.
I would agree. The one that stuck out to me, outside of this too, we'll talk about them more when we do our SEC West here at the top of the show.
So which one were we talking about just now? Are we talking Ole Miss or are we talking Alabama?
What do you mean?
Cause I mean, we didn't even address Kevin Steele.
Well, Kevin Steele, we could throw in. I just think Kevin Steele, Bama's going to be fine. Like Kevin Steele is going to be an upgrade, right? Like there's no question that Bama's defense is better in 2023. Than what it was last year, right? Like Kevin Steele is an upgrade.
Yeah, but how, we don't know how much of an upgrade, really. I think we can
safely
say.
Has he ever had a bad defense?
But I would say we can safely say that Ole Miss is going to have an upgrade defensively.
That's true.
That Golding is better than whoever they had, but Golding is they did have a good defense. They just lost Will Anderson, like Jordan Battle, like they have a couple key players from, I mean, Will Anderson is maybe the best player in college football. So it's not necessarily a more talented team next year. So I would say they're not going to be worse defensively, you could probably say, because it's Alabama, but like there's only so much so far they can go. But I don't know. I don't know if I would definitely say they're better.
I would just lean Kevin Steele is, I think, his third go around in Tuscaloosa. Saban knows him. Saban trusts him. Like those Auburn defenses with Malzahn and Kevin Steele were top notch. Like I'm going to just throw away the Miami blip here. I think Kevin Steele's going to be good. I think he'll be solid, especially Kevin Steele with talent. He knows the area. He's going to recruit well. I'm not really worried about Alabama's defense. I think it's going to be better. It seems like it's also like a coach in waiting situation until Jimmy Pruitt's allowed to be the DC again in Alabama. So I don't know. I think my gut tells me it's an upgrade, but I think it's a good point to say that like it's hard to see a situation where Pete Golding does not improve the Ole Miss defense in 2023, which is a huge upgrade because their offense is really good and it has a chance to be exceptionally good if Spencer Sanders or Jackson Dart breakthrough in a major way like Matt Corral did 2 years ago. So I think there's a lot of room for optimism there in Oxford right now.
And Ole Miss is, they're designing their team the way, you know, the way Tennessee's playing, the way, I mean, Nick Saban kind of has said you have to play. It's like, we're going to be offense first, and maybe our defense can get enough stops that we can just outscore everyone we play. So there's a chance
Alabama's
that Golding...
not playing like that anymore, though. Alabama's flipping the script here with Tommy Rees in the fold. I don't think they're playing that kind of football anymore.
I mean, we'll see. I mean, Saban made a declaration like 2-3 years ago that like great defense can't beat great offense anymore. So I don't know. I don't know if Saban is just going, I don't think a couple years of Georgia winning national championships. I mean, and honestly, it shouldn't change your mind. Like a couple years of Georgia winning national championships. It should change your mind that look, you can still figure out how to play elite defense in this today's age. But Georgia won the national championship the last 2 years because their offense was averaging 40 points a game. Like, they actually started having a top 10 offense to go with that elite defense. So you've always had to have a good offense and a good defense to some level. Like, maybe there's some give and take, and you can do what LSU did and just be so good offensively and have maybe an opportunistic defense and things like that. But it's like there's never going to be a time where you don't have to be good on both sides.
That's fair. The only one I was going to throw out here, and we'll talk about them in a bit here in the SEC West, is Travis Williams taking over another Gus Malzahn guy for Barry Odom. Kendall Briles also out. Dan Enos in. The thing about Sam Pittman to this point and that staff has been continuity, right? Like, that was one of the big things where it's like, oh, he's just going to be able to keep these guys. And that's just such a huge thing when you have two elite signal callers or play callers on just both sides of the ball. And they don't seem like they're going anywhere. And Sam Pittman, obviously, being an offensive line guy, that's huge that he nails the coordinator hires. I'm very curious to see if there's any drop-off from Barry Odom to Travis Williams. And the same being true for Enos, who was also there years ago, I think, with Brett Bielema. More of a run the ball down your throat, less kind of... It's just not going to be as fun and as open as what we've seen in the last couple years with Kendall Briles. I am very, very curious to see if these coordinator roles work out, these coordinator hires, rather, work out for the Hogs, because it's a huge year. They kind of had a down year this past year. It's not like Sam Pittman's on the hot seat or anything, but like, the West is tough, man. It's just tough. And you got Texas and Oklahoma coming over soon. Like, it seemed like you were kind of breaking through a little bit. He had some recruiting momentum out of the gate. He hit the portal pretty well. You have maybe the best returning quarterback in the SEC this year. I think it's a big year across the board for Arkansas. A&M down. Like, you just, there's a lot of reasons as to why you can make the case that Arkansas is maybe the most fascinating team in the West because of those coordinator changes from the continuity aspect, and also just having KJ Jefferson back, and just a lot of different layers here that make them extremely fascinating. And Travis Williams, I think, as the new DC, is another one of those examples.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think it's this is a huge year for Arkansas. Like you said, after kind of a disappointing 2022. But if you look at like what they were defensively, like they were awful. Like this yeah. team got absolutely torched, like in the hundreds in scoring defense last year. Like they were really bad. So as I feel like in 2021, I want to say they forced a lot of turnovers. Even statistically, I don't know how good they were that year, but I feel like they were like a defense that made plays, and Barry Odom got a lot of credit for that. It's like he also got the job at UNLV. Like, this, it's not like he got, you know, Ole Miss or something head coaching job. Like, he went to maybe the worst. Are they the worst of FB or Power 5, G5 football program out there right now?
Like, I think it's Rice.
They're up there. But so this defense definitely can get a lot better than it was, even though I do think Barry Odom was a good defensive coordinator. And like the continuity, like you said, was kind of a big thing for Arkansas and the culture that Sam Pittman had built and everything. So it's massive to get these two hires right this offseason. But yeah, I think it's interesting because there's definitely room for this defense to get a lot better.
Yeah, I think they're just what Arkansas does next year is going to be extremely, extremely fascinating to me. Matt Green, did you see the UCF football campus renderings for what they've got cooking here when they make their move to the Big 12?
I did. Getting that Big 12 money.
I love this.
Which, is that a good thing? It's obviously better than the AAC money.
It's an upgrade. It's definitely an upgrade. But it's a cool little thing. I was looking at this, and I've driven by UCF's campus once, and it was in Orlando for a wedding a couple years ago. And it's like, it's not near the beach. It's not a, UCF is not a beach.
It is Central Florida.
Yeah, it's not a beach school. So when I saw that, like, they're doing this this cool thing, I was looking at this and all these palm trees and the water, and I'm like, they are really making you think that this is right there on the water, that you're in Boca Raton, that you're going to be able to do what the FAU thing is. And that's not the case, but, you know, this is cool. Like, I was going through the different phases here, and UCF, man, I think it's still the biggest school in the state of Florida, but you got this lazy
it's
river.
It's like maybe the biggest school in the country, I think.
Is
as
it?
As far as enrollment goes, it's got a huge, like, I think, commuter population. But yeah, I think it's like 50,000 students or something.
Huh. But, you know, I'm excited to see what they do in the Big 12, but a lot of buy-in from the administration, the fans, and obviously UCF near and dear to my heart, giving us Danny White and Josh Heupel just a few years ago. So as we say on this podcast, go Knights. We can never say that enough, that little portal there from Orlando to Knoxville. But I don't know. I think that's pretty cool, and I'm excited. Like, if you had to, Matt Green, if you're in charge of the Athens expansion with the Texas-Oklahoma money that's coming in and the new TV deal that's coming in for every SEC school, with what you know about Athens and the University of Georgia, what would you add? Like, what would be your thing? Not a lazy river. What would you think that? What would you add? What would
really
be cool to you as an 18-year-old coming to Georgia?
Me on the spot here. Well, off the top of my head, I know Clemson has always been called Auburn with a lake. It's like basically two towns, it's the exact same, but Clemson has a lake.
Mm.
If there was like a cool lake, I mean, there is Lake Oconee kind of somewhere near Athens, but that's for the 1% out there, you know. That's not for the everyman. So
not like
I don't know.
Not like Ranch or Chase.
The lazy river sounds cool. I don't know.
What would you do though? What's cool? What is Athens? What could be on campus that would appeal to you? That you'd be like, man, that would make me as a football player wanna join up. I was on the fence, but you just added this particular thing. Would you do a theme park?
Honestly, seeing the things they've added, like at Georgia specifically, that I think they know. I think you just see what they've done. Like, you heard Nolan Smith talking during the NFL Combine, just sales pitching Georgia every chance he got, talking about they got a Bones inside the football facility. They're eating steak and lobster, and they're like all this stuff, like. So I feel like just food, I just want to eat good food all the time. Like, so if I was, that would definitely appeal to me. Just more, I don't know.
What would you eat? What's your thing? Well, like, if you had that option, like if you're chowing down, like, and you had your choice of whatever to stay in football shape, what are you asking for from the dining hall?
I mean, like some steak and potatoes or something. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that's probably,
that's heavy,
probably
man.
Probably my go-to. I mean, I'm keeping weight. What? I'm a football player, right? I gotta be a solid. I mean, I'd be a leaner football player, obviously. But but yeah, I don't know. That would probably be my go-to. Pizza and like wings and steak. Like that would pretty much. I get some potatoes and some Brussels sprouts. You know, some broccoli.
Do you eat Brussels sprouts and broccoli?
Yeah, Tori actually turned me on to Brussels sprouts. I was I was never a Brussels sprouts guy, but I make some excellent Brussels sprouts. I'll tell you what. I make an excellent mashed potato as well. You know,
it's
not
just you and potatoes.
Horn,
you do all this. Like, what do you, the loaded mashed potatoes and all this? Then the that's
I do love a good loaded mashed.
What is it?
Potato.
No, you did like a double loaded. What is it? You double
baked? The twice baked potato. Yeah, that on my YouTube channel. That was like I did that for school. Yeah. I saw those Instagram food videos, and I was like, I could do one of these. But yeah.
Wow.
So that was I you know what? When I did that, when we filmed the video in my parents' kitchen, we made steak that night to eat with the twice baked potatoes that we had cooked for our demonstration.
What's your mom's best meal she cooks? She's gonna be listening to this and she's gonna wanna know.
Ooh, my mom's best meal? Probably the stuffed shells. My mom does a good stuffed shell.
What is that? What do you mean a stuffed shell? What goes in it?
You know what a shell is, right?
Well,
like,
I mean,
the pasta, like the pasta, like jumbo shells, you know?
I've never had that.
You never had shell? Oh, I mean, it's really good. You just, you can stuff it with anything, like, you know, ricotta cheese and chicken and just all kind of different stuff and throw some sauce on that. Yeah.
Kind of like a calzone, just with a shell.
Yeah, sure.
I'm just imagining a calzone with like a macaroni shell or something.
Like, I don't know. You never seen like any sort of pasta that's like stuffed with like cheese,
ravioli?
Or something, or kind of. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's probably a bigger ravioli. That's probably how you would describe it. But it's like the pasta things, they open. You like boil them, obviously. Then you open them up and you gotta stuff them in. So yeah, that's a quality meal that my mom does.
There you go. Shout out to Mrs. Green there. Matt Green, speaking of greens, the SEC West, we're doing that here on this very program. We did the SEC East last week. You can check out on this very feed.
Can I stop you real quick before you get into it? Cause I know the people want to know when I just throw out a little fun facts.
Central Florida
is the second biggest school in the country.
Is A&M first?
Texas A&M is first, and it's barely the biggest school in Florida because Florida's actually four, and then Rutgers is three, and Ohio State to
is Rutgers really three?
It is indeed.
Huh.
According
I would
to
never
this
have guessed Rutgers had a huge
page
enrollment.
I'm currently looking at.
That's why the Big Ten needed that New York market, man. You got to add Rutgers.
And the thurs, Georgia State coming in at number 10 on this list.
Wow, so they're the biggest in the state of Georgia.
Yeah, and then also, well, I'll read the whole list. Arizona State 6.
1 through 150 or 130? Let's go.
Arizona State 6, Illinois 7, Florida International 8, University of Texas 9, and then Georgia State 10. So a couple of surprising, a couple of blue bloods on there, and then just, I think, no shade, but I think schools that just let everybody in. Let's
be honest. Shots fired. Shots fired. Matt Green, SEC West. Same question format we got from a week ago. I think this is a fun exercise to kind of get our firm grasp on how things went in the SEC West a season ago. My first question to you, who overachieved 1 through 7 in the SEC West in 2022 in your estimation, sir?
I think if you're going to looking at anyone who overachieved, it's got to be LSU. I think for one, it was year one. I slow down. It's hard to say they overachieved because they lost four games. So it's like you see LSU went 10-4. That's about what you would expect with a good first year head coach like Brian Kelly. But winning the SEC West is what I think absolutely shocked everybody. So, like, having a game like Florida State early on, you lose by one. It's like, you know, take a couple, like, you know, a couple lumps early. Obviously, Tennessee beat the brakes off of them in Death Valley. But to beat Alabama and then lose to A&M the way they did, it was, like, and from that perspective, it's similar to, like, Tennessee's season. It's like it was such an overachieving season, but then the way you ended it was kind of, this is kind of where we kind of thought we were going to be at the jump. Like, losing to A&M was just kind of, it was kind of predictable because it felt like this team doesn't seem like they're this good, and then they got one more loss, like, for good measure. Like, yeah, 9-3, that seems more like what we expected them to do in the regular season. But, so I don't think they were necessarily – it was just surprising for them to beat Alabama, I think, mostly, more than anything. So while I don't think they were the best team in the West, for them to win the West year one is definitely overachieving.
I think we can't understate how big it was to beat Bama in year one. Like, Brian Kelly, I think, outside of the off-the-field dorkiness, that sort of thing, the man can coach. You can make the case he's the best coach in Notre Dame history. He's a top five coach, no question, in the sport. It just, people thought it was going to be a little bit of a break, just kind of a blip adjusting to the SEC. Like, it was just going to be kind of a gap year. A lot of transfers, figuring stuff out. What kind of offense was he going to run? Obviously, the special teams coordinator hired did not work with Polian. They had special teams problems all throughout the year. They addressed that this offseason. He's now in like a off the field, like kind of GM type role with LSU. But all the time in the world, they didn't get anything really from Butte for the entirety of the season. Jane Daniels, like, we didn't know going in who was going to be QB1. Was it going to be Jane Daniels? Was it going to be Garrett Nussmeier? Who was it going to be? Was it going to be Walker Howard? Like, there were options with what LSU was going to look like. And like you said, you get blown out at home by Tennessee, and the fans like left in the third quarter. It was like, oh, this is going to be a really rough LSU year, because you obviously lost in embarrassing fashion to open the year in the Superdome against Florida State. But then you beat Florida at Florida. You blow out Ole Miss. And at the time, another one where it was like, that was a stunner. Like, LSU just beating the brakes off Ole Miss was a big deal, which has also turned into a little bit of a sneaky rivalry. And I think they're going to be one of the three permanent rivals for LSU with the new group. So that's something that's big for them. And then you beat Bama right after that. Then you go to Arkansas. Like, that 4-week stretch for me was like, oh, Brian Kelly's ahead of schedule. Like you said, they lose that just dumb game to A&M late that kind of hurt stuff, because A&M was just rough all year long. But that month, you can't do much better than that year one. Like, you won't find many coaches just in the 21st century that pulled off a month like that, where you get blown out by Tennessee at home and then just respond by dropping 45 on Florida on the road, 45 against Ole Miss at home, 32 and went in overtime in dramatic fashion. And the ballsy decision to call the play you did to Jason Taylor's, what, son? Is it it's his son, right?
I think it's his nephew.
Okay, nephew.
I could be wrong.
I think maybe it is nephew. And then you go to Arkansas, another rival, and you win in a completely different kind of game, 13-10. I don't know. I just look at LSU season as a whole. Yeah, it didn't end the way you wanted to do. They probably were like, do we have to play in the SEC title game? Like, we kind of just are pretty happy with our season to this point. Like, yeah, we lost to A&M down the stretch, but we're not really ready for the CFP. We know we're not gonna make it, that sort of thing. But then you say, like, it didn't end well. They beat Purdue 63-7 in the bowl game, sir. Like, I don't know. I think LSU definitely overachieved. And when you look at next year, I mean, they're my preseason, Matt Green. They're my favorite in the SEC. Like, if I had to do who was most likely to win the SEC next year among all the contenders, my first instinct would go LSU. And, I mean, it's a testament because of how much they overachieved last year and the talent they're bringing in. Jane Daniels really flashing late. I don't know. I think everything, all signs are pointing up for the Tigers.
Yeah, I think SEC media days, I think LSU is going to be the biggest choice to win the West this year, personally. I think this is kind of, now year two, the expectations are really there. And also, you look at the SEC West last year, there's not a lot of candidates for overachieving. I think Mississippi State may be the only other one, just kind of based on, you know, some of the other teams being a little down, and they end up winning 9 games.
Well, speaking of, this is going to be tough. You only can pick one, Matt Green. Who underachieved the most in 2022 in the West? Because, I mean, there are some choices, like you said.
I will not pick just one, sir, because the entire SEC West underachieved last year, with the exception of LSU and Mississippi State. Because you just look at this division, and like we're told every year of how much of a gauntlet the SEC West is, and this division was just low-key like bad last year. Like, it just wasn't very good. Like, the Pac-12 doesn't have divisions. If they did, the Pac-12 North and the Pac-12 South would have been better than the Big Ten than the SEC West was last year. Like, the Big Ten East, easily better than the SEC West. The Big Ten Why do I keep saying Big Ten? The SEC West went 6-9 versus the SEC East last year. So was the East better than the West last year? It may have been. You at least had two teams right there at the top that were like college football playoff contenders, and then another that was barely ranked. Like both of them kind of had a third team that was ranked that no one really thought was that good in Mississippi State and South Carolina. So I look at the entire SEC West, like if I have to say one team underachieved the most, like, well, as a process of elimination, like I can't say Auburn underachieved the most, because it's like we all expected Auburn to be at the bottom and Harsin, all that deal to be over. Ole Miss, I don't feel like underachieved. I think that's exactly how good they were, but they were kind of hyped up. Like you said, when LSU beat them, they were number seven when LSU beat them last year. Arkansas definitely underachieved, but I mean, nobody underachieved the way Texas A&M underachieved. So what were they, preseason six, and they go 5-7. So it doesn't get any better than it doesn't get any worse than that. But I'd say this division on a whole, as a whole, underachieved last year.
Are we
and
sure?
Obviously, A&M I left out Alabama, who lost two games last year.
Are we sure A&M underachieved more than Auburn?
I think so. I mean, they're preseason number six. There had to be a reason so many people thought they were preseason number six. You've seen how A&M has recruited in recent years. Obviously, that record-breaking class was true freshmen, so you can't put that much on them in year one. But, like, Auburn, like, the signs have been there. Like, no one was expecting – everyone was expecting Brian Harsin to get fired going into last year. So it's like, what were the expectations, really? If anything, they almost exceeded expectations by almost making a bowl game there at the end with Cadillac Williams as the head coach. But – like,
I don't know, Matt Green, because they barely beat San Jose State. Like, we can make the jokes, like, it looked like Brian Harsin was not going to make the job. Like, that was just obvious that Brian Harsin was not long for the Plains. That being said, they were way worse than they should have been. They are still a team in the blue chip ratio coming into this past year. Like, that was still a team that was super talented on both sides of the ball. They still had a lot. Like, obviously, the quarterback issue with Robbie Ashford and company and TJ Finley in and out. Like, they never figured that out for the majority of the season. Didn't have a lot of weapons at wide out. I get that. Tank Bigsby was still back there. Like, they had dudes on both sides of the ball. It's still Auburn at the end of the day. Like, this is not like a Mizzou type situation, or I mean, even just
Mizzou was a terrible team. They were lucky to beat too.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So you barely beat San Jose State at home, 24-16 in week two. You get absolutely blown out at home by Penn State. You barely beat Mizzou in overtime, lose to LSU at home, get blasted by Georgia on the road. That's fine. Then you give up 48 to Ole Miss on the road. You give up 41 to Arkansas at home in a blowout loss. You lose at Mississippi State. You barely beat a terrible A&M team. Like, I look at this and I was like, I think there's a case they underachieved. Like, I understand they were not going to be the premier best version of Auburn, but like, they should have been better. This should have been a better football team. Like, A&M, I think coming in, I was like, why do we keep doing this with the offense? Like, what are we doing? Like, why are we betting on the offense to get figured out? Like, the defense will probably be fine, but A&M, like, who believes that Jimbo is going to get this offense turned around? I think with Auburn, you were like...
But it was also not having to turn it around necessarily in 2020, coming into 2022. Like, 2021, when, what was their record in 2020 was obviously the best season. 2021 was like a disappointing, like 8-5 or something, right? Like the Kevin Sumlin special. But
Auburn was 97th in defensive points allowed this past year. 97th. When is Auburn ever 97th in that?
Like, no, and that's definitely true, but that's why I start to question things like the blue chip ratio when Auburn is in it.
They were 86th in offense. They were just horrible. They looked like Vanderbilt most weeks. Auburn looked like Vanderbilt most weeks.
I watched Auburn play, like I didn't come away with thinking like they have so much talent. Like, if I didn't know what these guys' star ratings were coming out of high school, I wouldn't say this is a talented team.
But that's a testament
to
the coaching, right? Like, they got nothing out of the talent they still had. Like, this was not a dearth of talent at Auburn. I think that when folks see Hugh Freeze win a lot of games this year, it's going to be with a lot of dudes who were on that roster last year who are just put in better positions to succeed. Yes, there are some transfers that are coming into Auburn, but like, it's still by and large a lot of the same dudes from a year ago. Like, I think Hugh Freeze and Auburn are going to win a lot of games this fall. And I think it's just a testament because I think Auburn actually really underachieved more than anybody else in the West. They should not have been that bad. There was no excuse.
What is a lot of games?
I think 9's doable for Auburn. 8 or 9.
Okay. I think 9 feels like an absolute tip top of the ceiling to me. Like in year
if that
one,
offense is top 15, top 10 somewhere in the country, like it's doable. Like there's a path where Hugh Freeze immediately turns that offense into a fun, really good unit.
There, I mean, I'll give you that. There's a chance that Hugh Freeze is that much better of a coach than Brian Harsin, that they're it's night and day to what they are next season. But we haven't said anything about Alabama also. Mm. Like, returning Heisman Trophy winner and who was basically, the consensus best player in college football coming into 2022 was Will Anderson. And to have two, like, just – maybe historically great. It's hard to call him historically great because Alabama just kind of has a couple guys. They got Tua and Quinnen Williams on the same team a couple years prior. So it's hard to say historic, but it kind of was. And in this Alabama team, they lost two games by a total of, 4 points? But I don't know. From what we expect them to be every year and this being a revenge tour of a season for Alabama and all that, for them to just, I don't know, not look great for a second year in a row, it's not that they weren't a good team in 2021. Obviously, they went to the national championship game. But we're used to this level of Alabama when they beat people 48-7. You know, like we saw all last year, like with the Florida game, with – losing to A&M, like there was the Auburn game, was that the one in overtime in 2021? Like just so many games that they played, like to Arkansas too, like so many tight games they played last year, and then to lose a couple in 2022, the program appears to be trending in the wrong direction. I think 2023 replacing both coordinators, I think it's a big year for Alabama. They're definitely, especially with what they're supposed to achieve, it's not as realistic as everyone else in the West. But what they do isn't realistic, right? It's a whole other level of anyone else in college football. So from that perspective, what they're supposed to be, it was definitely a huge underachievement.
You lost two games by 4 points, and it was at Tennessee, best offense in college football last year, the rival. Like you were right there multiple times. Like Bryce Young was the best quarterback in the country all season long. Jahmyr Gibbs was awesome. Obviously, like you said, the defense didn't do enough in certain moments, but like you go through the schedule and you went week by week, like they still felt like a top five program all year long. It just feels like they underachieved because we've never seen, like, it's just silly that like Mac Jones led the best Bama offense ever and he wins a national title in 2020. And then you get 2 years of Bryce, the best quarterback Alabama's ever had, and it's not even really particularly close, and he doesn't get anything. Like, he doesn't get a ring. It's just, it's funny how sports works,
Mac,
man.
Mac Jones, though. Don't paint Mac Jones like some Greg McElroy or something.
I'm not saying he's Greg McElroy.
He balled out that year.
He's no Bryce Young. Bryce Young was doing stuff with nobody. But, like,
I do think
Jalen Waddle and Devontae Smith and company. Like, he had dudes everywhere. And that's not his fault. Like, he had dudes everywhere. Like, you're doing Kobe Prentice, and, like, you're over here trying to get Ja'Cory Brooks open. And, like, he was running for his life trying to make stuff happen. It was weird all year long to watch Alabama without the difference makers out wide. Like, it kind of looked like Clemson the last couple years, where it's like, oh, T. Higgins isn't around anymore, or Amari Rodgers, or insert big playmaker here. It's like, oh, this isn't great. Like, when you don't have those kind of guys out wide that can dominate, make life easier for your star quarterback, it's a little bit more difficult to win football games in Power 5 conferences week over week. And I think Bama, it just was weird all year long that they had no dudes that scared you out wide.
Exactly. I think that's why I look at it as such underachievement, is because I think, to all the points you made, I think Bryce Young is the best Alabama quarterback that Saban has had, or ever at Alabama. Yeah. So for him to not get a national championship in his 2 years as a starter, in a way, it does feel like you wasted potentially the best quarterback you'll ever have. And
but it doesn't hurt because you're like, you're Bama and you've won so many national titles. You're like, oh, that was weird. We didn't win
one.
Of
course. It is weird for sure. But I do worry about them moving forward just because, like.
What do you mean you're worried about them? They just have the number one class. Like, what are you worried about?
Because they had Bryce Young. So the quarterback position is going to be worse next year. Like, it's.
Yeah. And that's when they'll win a title.
It's safe to say it should be significantly worse because of how good Bryce Young was. It significantly worse can still be a pretty solid quarterback, but they didn't have the playmakers out wide last year. It's like, who are they? Like, they're bringing in some freshmen, but like, I don't know that those guys are on the roster in 2023 either. So I don't know. It'll be an interesting year replacing both coordinators. Like, we know Saban's done that a few times, but I don't know. There's a lot of things kind of – whatever the opposite of stars aligning, like a perfect storm, I guess. Mm. Like, there's a lot of things kind of going against Alabama to where, like, you wouldn't be surprised if it's a 2 or 3 loss team next year because, you know, how much Bryce Young really did kind of make up for some of their shortcomings last year.
Best game in 2022 in the SEC West last year was who, Matt Green?
Man, so I was just going through this, and I was just like – is Alabama the only team that played in any great games? I was just like, Alabama LSU was a great game. Alabama Arkansas was a sneaky good game. Turned into a track meet in the fourth quarter, but they were up like, what, 28-7, I think, when Bryce Young got hurt. Arkansas outscored them like 17-0 in the third quarter, yeah. and it's a game. But then I think Jahmyr Gibbs had like two. They had like 2 or 3 80-yard plays in the fourth quarter, but got a little out of hand. And then playing without Bryce Young against Texas A&M, like that game went down to the wire. The goal line stand there at the end. So yeah, it was.
Hold on, you're missing the biggest one of the year for them.
Of Alabama?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm counting all the SEC West games.
Tennessee? You're missing one.
Who are you going with?
It's at Ole Miss. Ole Miss, Alabama was good. That was actually a good back and forth game. Bryce Young, he comes through, like, obviously the Ole Miss has the ball in their hands with the game on the line. Jackson Dart drives. They get in the Alabama red zone, and they cannot do anything with it to end. I thought that was like a sneaky – that was my pick, actually, was Ole Miss, Alabama. I really, really enjoyed that one. It was low scoring. It was back and forth. Ole Miss really wanted that one. Kiffin really wanted that one, you could tell. Like, they were right there, and they were knocking at the door and just could not finish the drill with Jackson Dart. That was, like, the game where I was like, oh, Jackson Dart might not be the guy. That was one of those where I was like, hey, I don't know. And then a few months later, Spencer Sanders has entered.
But it's crazy because I feel like we just named, like, 4 games this season. It's like, and then another 4 or 5 last season. It's like, before that, you had to go back a decade to find 4 or 5 games against the SEC West that Alabama like pulled out at the very end. Like, it's
so was that good for the conference or bad that these?
It's
Alabama's
great
all these
for the it's okay. great for the product and watching games and the CBS 330 game not just being a 42-7 beatdown that's over by halftime. But I mean, if Georgia just replaces them, that doesn't really change anything. But But yeah, you just look at the last couple of years, they're not the juggernaut. They're still like the best of all those teams, but they're not just the head and shoulders best like they once were.
It's also kind of just sad that we didn't get Bama Georgia at all last year. Like, it's kind of a travesty that they're not playing every year. Like, it's just if you feel a little bit robbed.
I mean, how many years have we had it in a row?
Well, that's what I'm saying. They have to play once. Like, it's just. You have to play once a year. Like,
so what, they played 2017, 2018, 2020, 2021. So, yeah, they didn't play 2019, but that's just because Alabama couldn't get to the SEC Championship. You know, Georgia was there.
That's what
they're
happened
waiting
this year.
On them.
Yeah.
Exactly. But, yeah, that's – hey, you know, you gotta play the hand you're dealt. You know,
I'm just saying that, like, as a college football connoisseur – It's weird that like you want that game to happen every year now. Like, you want to just see it every year.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny too, just from like a national just viewpoint, like Alabama and Georgia should be rivals. You know? Yeah. It's like like Tori, like I remember years ago, it's like still like a running joke to us. She just like, she saw Michigan and Wisconsin playing basketball one day, like, oh, that's gotta be a huge rivalry, right? And I was like, I mean, I guess. Like, I don't, Michigan, Wisconsin, I don't really know, but I'm sure they touch each other, like they're right next, yeah, the Big Ten schools. I'm sure there's some sort of hostility between Michigan and Wisconsin. Like that, but Alabama, Georgia, it's never been a rival. It's like almost a Cold War type of rivalry that like they didn't play that often. It wasn't until like these especially like the first decade or plus of the SEC championship, you never saw a Georgia Alabama matchup. So
I mean, as a Tennessee fan, you can have them. Like, we're more than fine giving you Alabama as a third permanent rival, and we'll take South Carolina and Kentucky. That works for us. South Carolina, Kentucky, Vanderbilt. It's fine.
That would be the ultimate curveball if the SEC came out and Georgia and Alabama were locked rivals every year. But with
can you
with
imagine
both
the
of
comments
having...
from Saban though, if they were to do that? If you give him Georgia, LSU, and I guess who would be the other one in that scenario?
I mean, they got to play Auburn.
Yeah. So there you go. Oh, I don't think that would be great.
No, I don't see that happening.
Should these fans expect the 2023 results most years, Matt Green? So when you go 7-1, who jumps off the page as they should expect it, and who shouldn't? Let's run through these quickly.
I would say, you're going to run how they finished?
Yes, and then basically you make the point of whether or not fans should expect. This should be normal.
As we go?
Yes,
or...
as we go, okay. Yeah.
Can I say something before we name all of them?
Yeah.
Just a disclaimer here, not to ruin the whole segment. Nobody should expect to be where they finished in 2022. But let's run through it. I'll tell you why.
Okay. That's a good tease. So where are we going with that?
I feel like you start with LSU at the top, right?
Yeah, you got to go up and down, yeah.
LSU can expect to compete for SEC West titles, obviously, year in, year out, even though we're only going to have this one more year. But... the 10-4, like they're expecting better than 10-4. LSU's good seasons aren't losing four games, so first place in the West, it's not foreign territory to them, but it's also not necessarily like they have to finish first or else they're underachieving. You know, like they gotta win the West, you know, every couple years or so. But I think it's not necessarily they have to win the West every year.
Okay, I like it. Number two, Alabama, 11-2.
Number two, Alabama. That basically sums up everything. Alabama's not the kind of program that thinks of them as number two at anything. So 11-2, excellent season. Lost two games by four total points. But at Alabama, no. Second place in the West, that's not where they expect to be every year.
Number three, Mississippi State, 9-4 overall.
Mississippi State should be absolutely thrilled with third place in the SEC West. But like I was saying earlier, I think it's more of an indictment on the rest of the SEC West. I don't think Mississippi State was a good team last year. Like, they were fine. But you got a bunch of teams that had big-time expectations in the bottom of that conference or in the bottom of that division. I think that's the reason Mississippi State was up at third more than anything. Like,
but they're never last, Matt Green. Go through it. That's I was looking at that the other day. Like, they're just always in the middle. Like, everyone wants to put them down at the bottom of the conference every year. Like, obviously, the Tech and Mullineers are some of those who you're putting them up top. But, like, Mississippi State
I'm sure they weren't predicted to be up top
exactly.
those years.
But they're the model of consistency. No one wants to put the Bulldogs. Like, it is silly in the year 2023 to continue to put. Like, if you're betting on the Bulldogs being last in the West next year, just you're throwing money away. You might as well just burn it up because they never finish last. The dogs always overachieve. They're always somewhere in the middle of the West when it's all said and done.
I think that's fair. I think we've said this multiple times when we're going through like our SEC win loss preseason, and it's like they feel like a Vanderbilt that like you're counting them as a win on everybody's schedule, but
it never works that way.
They're not gonna lose every game. Like, they're not even gonna. They might not even lose most games. I feel like they're usually like maybe a 3-5, 4-4 in the conference or something like that. But what were they? They're 4-4 in each of the last 2 years in the conference. So.
Yeah, they're consistent.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, third isn't a crazy expectation to expect to be third, but I think it's – it almost feels like we've had those times of having, like, a big three, you know, in each. Like, when Georgia, Tennessee, and Florida in the East, Alabama, LSU, and probably Auburn, I would say, the third, and A&M kind of has come along too. But that kind of traditionally was the big three. For Mississippi State to crack that, like, you might have your years, but that's probably not a reasonable – expectation year in, year out.
But like 5-4, 4-5 when they go to a 9-game schedule next year, I think that's fair. I think that you should expect that as a state
if they're fan. Looking at like, yeah, if they're looking at 9-4 as like our sixth season was a success, like, yeah, then I'm right there with you. That's, yeah, you shouldn't really expect anything more.
No, I would agree, unless you just want to be the most miserable man in Starkville, Mississippi. You're like, can you imagine the guy who's like, this is nonsense. Like, I don't, like, we should be competing for titles. We're the sleeping giant here in the Southeastern Conference. Like, I don't know what folks are missing here, but Stark Vegas should be leading this side of the division. I wonder if there are any of those folks, or if everyone's a realistic Mississippi State fan where they're like, hey, we're here to have fun. Where are we going next? Last one. Ole Miss, funny enough, 4-4 in the conference overall and 8-5 overall. I think this is a tough one in the modern Ole Miss Lane Kiffin gambit, Matt Grimm. I'm interested to see where you go here.
I think Ole Miss, I don't even know how to describe Ole Miss. Ole Miss feels like there's like the C-list celebrities, you know, there's like the A-list celebrities. Then I feel like you got the B-list celebrities that think they're better than the C's, but they're not really, but they're definitely worse than the A's, but they think they belong with the A's. That's where Ole Miss feels like. Mm. You know, it's like fourth, we're at fourth in the West. Fourth in the West is probably exactly where Ole Miss should be year in and year out, but they think they're better than that, and I'm not sure they're as good as that, to be honest. Like, I think they might have been one of the two or three worst teams in the West last year. I mean, I guess they finished fourth, so they're right just above the 2-3 worst teams. So I wasn't that impressed with Ole Miss last year. I've obviously been highly critical of them all season, but they're one of those teams that I don't know they know what their expectations should be. They're just like, we got Lane Kiffin now, and it's fun. People seem to talk about us now more than they used to. We're scoring points. No one's accusing us of cheating. I things are good. This is fine. Everything is fine.
I think they can expect. I think it, for Ole Miss, it comes down to coaching for me, right? Where like Hugh Freeze got him like double digit wins, like beat Bama twice. He had the offense that really clicked. He recruited really well briefly at Ole Miss. Kiffin's found a different way. He's killed it in the portal. I mean, he's had a Heisman-esque quarterback in Matt Corral. He's going to keep bringing in names. He brought in Spencer Sanders. Walker Howard might be the long-term answer here. Jackson Dart was still a big get at the time. Quinshon Jenkins? I always get it confused. The running back who was just awesome for them last year. But he might be the best returning tailback in the SEC next year. You just look at it like good hires, like we just talked about. Pete Golding should be an upgrade. Like Lane Kiffin, outside of Josh Heupel, best offensive mind left in the SEC, like mocking out the door. It's Kiffin and Heupel, like as the two, I think, most exciting, innovative, top 10 consistent offenses in the sport. And hey, when you look at...
Don't you forget about Robert Petrino, sir.
I mean, he's the wild card, but I need Jimbo to confirm that Bobby Petrino will be calling plays week one. Like, I'm going to need that assurance from Jimbo that this is Bobby Petrino's show before I throw Bobby Petrino back in the mix. But he's absolutely never had a bad offense. He's right there. But we'll have to see if that's the case. But for me, I think it's I think they should expect like 3-4 losses at worst. I think 500 football, like let's just get a bowl game most year and be happy. I think those days are gone. I think with Lane Kiffin And with what they're able to do at this present time, I think the expectation should be like, we can't win the West every year, or we know that, like, we can't. We're never going to be the favorites. But, like, every 2 to 3 years, we should be in the thick of it for making the college football playoff. Like, we should, with our offense and with what we can do, we should be in the thick of it every couple of years. I think that's fair.
And that's what I agree with you. And that's why I think four feels low and it feels high. It's like with everyone in the West, it's hard to see Ole Miss consistently being the fourth best program. But I think they think they can win the West, be the second, third team in the – I mean, they were their second as recent as 2021. So,
yeah,
it's hard to know. They're like in this kind of purgatory of like – are they the only school – them and Mississippi State that haven't made the Mississippi State has. Them and Texas A&M are the only ones that will maybe never make the SEC championship. I guess we'll still have the SEC championship after we get rid of the divisions. But under this format, they have never won the West. So
wait, Vanderbilt's never won.
No, I'm saying from the West, everyone has made the SEC championship except for A&M and Ole Miss.
Yeah. Arkansas, 3-5, 7-6. Are you going to piss off some Arkansas fans here, Matt Green?
Arkansas should absolutely be better than fifth in the West. I think they can I don't know that they should be. I should take that back. They can reasonably expect to be better than fifth in the West. It's like Sam Pittman reminded them, like, we don't have to be terrible here at Arkansas. Like, we can be a respectable SEC program. They should be going to a bowl every year. I think that's the floor for Arkansas. You can finish sixth, seventh in the West and still potentially go to a bowl game. So, in some years, there's a, you know, maybe fifth isn't the most outrageous place to see Arkansas, but I think their fan base expects... I mean, that's the SEC. Every fan base expects to compete for championships, but somebody's got to be in the bottom half of the conference. And that kind of feels like where Arkansas has been. But, you know, this is obviously a big year for them, but I think they can expect better than fifth. So I'm gonna say over that for Arkansas.
Interesting. I'm going to say under. I'm just not an Arkansas believer. I think you just have to plant your flag in different spots where I'm like, if I'm going to plant my flag with Ole Miss, should expect more, then I think I have to plant my flag and say that Arkansas fans.
So you think Arkansas should expect to finish like last place in the SEC West? They should just be fine with that?
Okay. This is going to make some folks angry. I'm sorry, Arkansas fans. A&M, NIL, location, should always be better than Arkansas. Auburn should always be better than Arkansas. Mississippi State should not. Ole Miss, I don't think should, generally speaking, but I think they're just in much better shape, and I just trust Lane Kiffin more than I do Sam Pittman at this point.
So you think Ole Miss is in much better shape than Arkansas, like as a program right now today?
I do.
I would say they're almost on identical levels.
No, like everyone CEO loves... coach. I never trust the CEO coach. Maybe that's part of it, where I don't think the CEO coach lasts.
I think every coach has got to be a CEO at this level, though. It's like, I think the CEO coach is whatever that term means, exactly.
When you lose the coordinators, you lose those elite minds. When Orgeron loses the Joe Brady and Dave Aranda's, and when...
But Orgeron was a bad coach. Like, Orgeron was never a good coach at any level. You know what I mean? Like, he just...
I mean, he won a national title.
I feel like he just kind of lucked in.
Won a national title,
but like you said, he lucked into the... Like, he was never good before those guys got there. You know what I mean? He was just...
He hired well, though.
Yeah, no, and credit to him for that. But it's like, there's... Nick Saban is a CEO, right? I mean, he's a defensive...
But he still has his fingerprints all over that defense. He's still involved. Like, the defense is never going to fall off
with
Nick Saban.
See, I don't even know how much Saban is still involved with the defense. Because
well,
I think
Kirby's still involved with the defense at Georgia.
But I think that might be one of Saban's problems. It's like, Kirby was running his defense for so long. It's like, once Kirby left, it was like, oh, well, you know, I wasn't really running this. Kirby was kind of doing this for a while. So Pruitt, you come in and keep doing it. And I don't know that Saban, because I think he is the CEO. I think that's what Saban is better at than anyone else, is truly being the CEO and running the organization to perfection. So I just don't know. What do you mean exactly, I guess I should say, when you say a CEO coach? Just a guy who doesn't have like a specialty offensive.
He doesn't have his thing. Like, yeah, he doesn't have that thing. Like, I know no matter what with Heupel, it's like he knows offense. Like, like when you lose Alex Golish, for instance, it's offseason, right? Offensive coordinator, he promotes from within with Joey Halsey, QB coach to OC. You know that there's like the offense is still in good hands either way. Like Golish being out the door is not like, uh-oh, is that it? Is that it for the top 10 offenses run? You're like, no, they're going to be all right. Sam Pittman loses Kendall Briles and replaces him with Dan Enos. You're like, I don't know about this, man. I don't know. This feels a little bit more concerning because like Sam Pittman's an offensive line guy. Like he's not someone who can call plays if he loses the big time coordinator. If Heupel will be calling plays again this fall. So it's like he'll step in. Like if Kirby loses Glenn Schumann, if he loses insert Mel Tucker, if he loses whoever on defense, like Georgia fans are not concerned because that side of the ball is always going to be okay because you have an elite head coach at that particular spot. So I think it's just always you're a little bit more wary of the CEO coaches when they get picked apart with their staff. And that's why Arkansas is going to be so fascinating to me. Is I'm very curious to see what happens when Pittman has to adjust with new coordinators and turnover in the coaching ranks, because he cannot just fall back to like, well, I was already good at this thing on my own. That's how I got this job to begin with. I can pick up the slack when things, when I lose some of a key assistants, like if it happened to Georgia or Tennessee or even Kentucky with Stoops, it's like whoever the DC, like I think what Brad White, like, yeah, if he got a job somewhere else, like, hey, good for him. But like, are you betting on Kentucky's defense to suddenly not be still a dominant physical group year in, year out? Like, I think that's what I'm saying with the CEO coach more so than anything else, where they don't have that strong background on one side of the ball.
No, I think that's fair. But I think, I think we make too many generalizations maybe about things like that, because like you've seen what Sam Pittman wants to be as a head coach, like hiring Briles, like this guy wants to have like a spread out offense. Like
that's not what Dan Enos is doing. They're going to look different next year.
But I'm saying, I think we have this perception of like what Brett Bielema was, and that's what an offensive line coach, he just wants to pound.
That's what
you,
they're going
to
look like though.
And it's like, but that could be what the personnel is better for this team. You know, you never know, but we'll see. I think, like you said, I think the coordinator hires are still huge for Arkansas because it's kind of a crossroads type of year.
But wouldn't you agree Auburn and A&M should be better year over year than Arkansas?
As programs, yeah, yes. I would agree with that. And that's why Ole Miss and Arkansas feel like
they're close,
like literally the exact same level, because like currently they both have head coaches that they absolutely love. So yeah. It's like they could both go 7-5 next year, and there's not like a whisper of hot seat talk.
Yeah.
Like it's, they're both like, yeah, we're a competitive football program right now. This is fine.
Yeah. It's also,
we've seen the bottom. We don't want to go back.
For sure. Speaking of Auburn, A&M, Auburn 2-6, 5-7 overall. Let's combine these two because they were both, 2-6 and 5-7 as a whole. Auburn and Texas A&M. I don't think there's any question. Like, this no excuse, right? Like, there's nothing else to say. Like, Auburn and A&M shouldn't be nowhere near this. The fans have a right to be like, Jimbo should be out if this happens again next year. And Auburn fans are right to be like, Brian Harsin's got to go. That we cannot. Like, you just can't. It's like the Kenny Payne thing at Louisville, right? Where you win, four games total for Louisville basketball? It's like, what? I don't care if it's year one. Like, it's Louisville basketball. Like, immediate firing. Like, there's a standard. There's some schools where it's like Kansas, UNC, whoever. But, like, the Blue Bloods, like, John Shire, if he wins 6 games at Duke, it's like, I don't care. You're out of here. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, you almost have to try to do that.
I mean, Hubert Davis missing the tournament North Carolina. That's
he's immediately on the hot seat now. Like, you just can't do that. I don't know. I think that's how I look at Auburn and A&M and at these two jobs, where it's like, no, those fans actually have a right to be incredibly insane about their expectations. Do you agree?
Is making the tournament the equivalent to making a bowl game?
Probably.
Is that like an agreement there? Like, Auburn and A&M should be making the tournament every year. Like, yeah,
yes.
They definitely have no business missing bowl games. So. Mm-hmm. I do question, like I said, the composite ranking, because I don't think Auburn was that talented just seeing them last year. I think they just have a lot of problems. Auburn just seems like a pro, like they had to hit rock bottom. And now it's like Hugh Freeze, he just feels like the guy to bring him back. I think we just all wanted Hugh Freeze to be hired when Harsin was hired and was like, let's go back and correct this thing. Like this is the marriage that made sense. But yeah, we know, like I was saying earlier, like traditionally, like the big three in the SEC West was always Alabama, LSU, and Auburn. And before Saban got there, it had been Auburn ahead of Alabama for several years. Like they were, I mean, I think, what, they beat them like 7 years in a row, I want to say. I don't think Cadillac Williams ever lost to Alabama. So from that perspective, it's like we kind of forget how good Auburn consistently was under Tommy Tuberville because they've just been such a, like the most, what's the term I'm looking for, volatile program mm-hmm. in the SEC. Like they just, you have no idea what you're getting year in and year out. And I think Hugh Freeze, while not just like the model of consistency by any means with the scandal and everything that he brought to Ole Miss, but in terms of just what he is as a head coach, you just think the ceiling or the floor for Auburn just has to be immediately higher.
Yeah, I agree. The most underrated player in college football, in the SEC West last year was who, Matt Green?
I'm going to go with a guy out of sticking with the Razorbacks here, Matt Landers. The former Georgia great, Matt Landers. Mm. No, much maligned in his Georgia career, but revived himself at Toledo. All the talk and the transfer portal wide receiver for Arkansas was Jaden Hazelwood from Oklahoma, the former five-star. Look at Matt Landers in the season he had last year. Averaged almost 19 yards a catch, like – this guy ran a 4.37 at the combine, 6.4, like 200. Like, he's got all the tools. Like, Rusty Mansell on Dogs 24/7 literally said that Matt Landers, like, changed the way he reported on practice because, like, Georgia fans would legit start to get mad at him. Like, because he's like, I'm telling you, this Matt Landers guy is, it looks like a superstar. Like, this guy, he's 6'4", 200. And like you see, he's got 4.3 something speed. Like, but for whatever reason, he didn't put it all together at Georgia. But the year he had at Arkansas last year, what were his total numbers? I had them pulled up here. 41 catches, 900 yards, 6 touchdowns, like, or 8 touchdowns. A big time season for him. I mean, this guy's going to turn himself into like maybe a top 3-round draft pick.
I like that. For me, it's Quinshon Judkins. So speaking to Ole Miss, I'm very pro Ole Miss in this podcast, and I just like Kiffin and what they got going. But who would you guess Matt Green had the number one rushing offense in the SEC last year?
I happen to know that was the Ole Miss Rebels.
Who do you think was responsible for the Ole Miss? Because coming into last year, Matt Green, what was the talk?
It was all about Zach Evans, for sure.
And it was not Zach Evans. It was the Quinshon show. And he was a wrecking ball, week in, week out. Kentucky, it didn't matter who he was facing. Like, he was a dude. Matt Corral out of the building, Jackson Dart in. Dart struggled throughout most of the year. It was not through the year the way Ole Miss was winning football games. I think Lane Kiffin deserves credit for this, for just evolving to his personnel and just kind of adjusting to what he had. And I think it was just kind of an under the radar aspect that, like, Ole Miss was just like, yeah, we're just gonna run down your throats, we're just gonna use the two-headed monster. And it really ended up just being Quinshon as the lead guy there. But he was electric all year long. 1500 yards, seventh I think in college football, 16 TDs, 5.7 yards per attempt. Man, like, he was dynamic all over the place. He was I think an extremely underrated name. 25 carries, 135 yards against Bama. Arkansas, 24 carries, 214 yards, 8.9 yards per attempt. Like, this dude was sneaky amazing, because there was so much talk about Jahmyr Gibbs, who was awesome, and a lot of hype coming in to the season for him coming over from Tech to Alabama. But it was actually Quinshon who I think was the underrated star of the West last year.
He was first team All SEC, but I agree with you in terms of like just a fan, mainstream, just the way people talk about college football. Like, I don't think anyone would have guessed this guy had 1,500 yards and 16 touchdowns. Like, that's an absolute workhorse. Like, that's not Derrick Henry numbers, but at least Leonard Fournette type numbers. Yeah. Like, that's Nick Chubb, freshman Nick Chubb numbers or something.
Yeah.
He was a baller last year. Was he a true freshman last year?
Yes.
Yeah, so they got a few more years. It's a similar scenario too, because Zach Evans was definitely the one that was given all the talk about how dynamic their offense was going to be.
For sure. Matt Green, most overrated player in the SEC West last year was who?
Most overrated player last year, and I'm also going to say that going into this year, I'm prepared. Get the freezing cold takes ready if I'm wrong about this one. Kool-Aid McKinstry. Mm. Like, I just do not understand the hype of Kool-Aid McKinstry. I'll start by saying he's the best punt returner in college football. So it's not that this man isn't a good football player. He's a dynamic, exciting player. I think he averaged like 15 yards a punt. Like, double digits per punt is good. But 15 yards a punt, he was a threat to take it to the house every time he touched it. But when I watch this guy, like, he's projected to be like a top 10 pick in 2024. And I'm just like, every time I watch him, he's grabbing, he's giving up catches. I don't know. I don't understand. His name's Kool-Aid and he's number one and he looks cool. I just think there's so much hype around him. Kind of how Kelee Ringo, I think, was a little overrated coming into last year because of the game-winning interception he had against Alabama. It's like, I never thought he was like a top 10 pick. There's people that get carried away. They're like, oh, he was getting burned all the time. He wasn't any good. It's like, no, he's like maybe a borderline first round pick. Like, he's still a stud, but he just wasn't that. Calling him like a top 5, top 10 pick, like comparing him to guys like a Patrick Peterson, a Jeff Okuda or something. He just didn't seem like that elite Sauce Gardner. He didn't seem like that elite lockdown corner. But like you've seen other guys George has produced, an Eric Stokes, a DeAndre Baker that are like first-round picks, he seems like he's more in line with those. Kool-Aid McKinstry being talked about like a top 5, top 10 pick, like I just don't get it. And he's also – he's pretty small too. I don't know what he's listed at, but when I see him on the – I don't trust what he's listed at also at the University of Alabama lying about all their heights and weights. But when I see him on the field, I'm just – for this guy to be the number, was he a number one corner, top 5-star corner coming out? I think he's a little on the overrated side.
I did not expect that one from you. This kind of caught me off guard, Matt Green. I did not have Kool-Aid McKinstry catching strays from you here on this program.
Yeah, man, he's I just don't see it. I don't see the top 5, top 10 pick, like just consensus All-American. Like, he's gonna be on everyone's first team All-American list. And to me, he's not a shutdown corner.
I think for me, this was hard. The overrated was hard in the West this past year. But I think I got to go with Will Rogers. Like, there was some, like, Will Rogers is going to be great. He's going to be the best quarterback in the West last year. Look, it just, he's fine. Like, Will Rogers is fine, I guess, is my whole thing. It's like, he doesn't make the wow throws. He's not going to win you games like Bryce Young. He's not electric with his feet. Doesn't have an electric arm. He's not really taking deep shots downfield. But you saw the Egg Bowl last year and how that was going. I'm watching Will Rogers and he's fine. I'm very, very fascinated to see what he looks like without the air raid this year. Like, making this big of a change for him, I'm curious to see if Will evolves and it's an easy, seamless transition to do what the App State offensive coordinator installs here, because it's gonna be a very different look than what he's used to, and I'm curious to see how he responds, because I think he was fine, like, but he was not like the, oh, watch out, Will Rogers might be the best quarterback in the SEC West going into next year, that no one's talking about. It's like, oh, production wise like, Bryce has the most talent, but Will Rogers might be the most efficient and this, and it's like, Will Rogers was fine. Like, he's okay. He's a bridge guy. He's no Dak Prescott. He's the insert big name here in the West in the last couple of years. I don't see it there with Will Rogers. He's fine, but he's not the guy.
Yeah, I think we've all seen the air raid guys. Like, yeah, they they put up huge numbers and they have high. I mean, there's something to be said for, you know, completing 70% of your passes when you're throwing the ball 50, 60 times a game.
But they're not deep. Like, they're, you yeah. watch it. It's like a lot of screens, a lot of short stuff. It's
yeah, exactly.
It's a little bit different. It's, he's fine. Like I said, he's not bad. He's just a little overrated in terms of what he can actually do for a program. Matt Green, last one here. Most difficult spot for this coach in 2023 based on what happened in 2022 in the West is who?
Most difficult spot, I would, like we said, with Arkansas and Ole Miss, it feels like it's going to take a lot to get that seat even warm. They're just in a really good spot there. Auburn, brand new head coach, you know, he's going to get some time. Well, it's Auburn, so you don't know how much time. The easy answer is Texas A&M, just because, like, the dumpster fire they've been, but it's like, we know how they've recruited too, so they should be in a position to get themselves out of this hole, you know, with the way they've stacked up talent. I think, kind of piggybacking off of your Will Rogers thing, I think it's Mississippi State, because it's unfortunate the rationale for it, but like, Mike Leach was that program, so you got to come in and follow. It's not like you're following Bear Bryant or anything, but it was like a legendary kind of figure in Mike Leach.
He won a lot of games. He was a great coach. Yeah,
exactly. And he was, more importantly, just had such a specific like style and just way
that works
of doing
when you don't
things.
Have those kind of players. Like, you're not going to be. Yeah, it's the
and so
style that works.
Mississippi State, it's just that's a hard position, a hard guy to hard circumstances to take over in, and then just like kind of a hard level to match too, because Mike Leach is one of the best out there at doing more with less.
I think it's a good one with Zach Garnett. Is there a case that it's Nick Saban?
Why? Make the case.
Number one recruiting class from this past cycle. Best he's ever had at Bama. He's going to next year. Is it Jalen Milroe? Is it Ty Simpson at quarterback? No Bryce Young to save them a lot of times this fall. Schedule's still going to be tough. You hire Tommy Reese, like, that was the big offensive coordinator hire. Like, all right, what's this offense gonna look like? Are you really gonna go back to what you were 12, 13 years ago? We've seen those Notre Dame offenses over the last couple years. We've seen how quarterbacks have played in the Notre Dame scheme most years. Saban, this was kind of a heat check hire in offseason to bring back Kevin Steele, hire Tommy Reese. I don't know. I think there's a case. You didn't win the West, obviously, last year. LSU is coming. Like, LSU, I think, is going to be favored to win more games than Alabama coming into the year. They're going to be a more appetizing pick to win the West. They have the better, more proven quarterback. That Brian Kelly beats you in year one. He wants the smoke. Saban's kind of grouchy this offseason about like scheduling and this, that, and the other. I think there's a case it's Saban who has the most, not on the line, it's like Saban doesn't have any Purdue's best college football coach of all time. But Bama fans, I think by and large, are pretty uneasy about the Tommy Reese hire. And I think they're pretty uneasy about how last year ultimately ended for the Tide. Yeah, you blew out Kansas State to send a message and all that, but like, you haven't won 2 years in a row now, which is just silly. But the expectations at Alabama are unbelievable for a reason, and the Tommy Reese hire is going to be a big inflection point, I think, years from now, as to was this the signal that like, oh, he really, it's like the Bill Belichick, where it's like when he makes Matt Patricia his offensive coordinator, like, ah, maybe Bill isn't infallible, maybe he can make some bad decisions and it doesn't end well even for the best NFL head coach of all time. What if we're seeing the beginning of that with Nick Saban, but it's like, I'm not going to go keep innovating and get another big innovative offensive mind. We're going to go to Notre Dame and just play it safe and try and run it back to the kind of football that I preferred with Kevin Steele and Notre Dame, and ground and pound, post pro style, slow ball control, pound you with our athletes type of offense.
There's no chance that's happening.
We'll see.
Way.
That's why I think there is so much intrigue. I have never been more interested to see how an Alabama team looks, because guess who's not afraid of Ty Simpson and Tommy Reese in Tuscaloosa this fall? The Tennessee Volunteers are not afraid. They just beat you in Knoxville. they are not afraid about having to outscore that what Alabama's offense might be. Like, I just don't think they're as fearful for some of the biggest programs in the conference. LSU's not afraid of them right now. Georgia's certainly not afraid of them. I think this is a big year for Alabama. I think they need to, and it's silly because they lost two games last year by a combined 4 points. But I think there are a lot of teams in the conference right now that smell blood in the water and are ready to pounce on Alabama.
Well, and I think the caveat with Alabama, too, is it's that the expectation is national championship. So yeah, the position that they are currently in terms of accomplishing their goal of winning a national championship, I think you could make an argument that they are in a tough position, but they have gotten they did just sign the highest ranked recruiting class of all time, and they're going to be number one in the composite talent ranking. Like, they've stacked elite recruits on top of elite recruits, so it is still Alabama, and the chances of them being good enough to win a national championship are still very high. The one thing with Nick Saban was probably stuck his foot in his mouth was calling the 2021 year more of a rebuilding year. Like, in his defense, it literally was. Like, to the same extent that you could say 2022 was a rebuilding year for Georgia with everything lost in 2021, but they just still had so much talent left over. With what Alabama lost in 2020, it was reasonable for them to come back down to earth, and coming back down to earth was losing by – was being in a position to win the national championship game with a minute left, right? Mm. So you were still an elite program. But losing Bryce Young, losing Will Anderson, I mean, if 2022 was not supposed to be a rebuilding year. So the fact that you kind of dubbed it like, oh, 2022, now we got everybody back. This is our talented team. We're going to go win the national championship. Maybe the most talented team Saban's ever had, some people were saying. So with what they lost in that year, with what they lost from last year, it's hard to expect them to be better than they were a year ago.
I mean, Texas at home, you get that. That's nice. They lucked out with a bye split between Tennessee at home and LSU at home. They still go to Auburn to close. I think that'll be rocky with Hugh Freeze. We'll see. At A&M, we know what happened last time with the A&M 2 years ago. We'll see what Petrino and company look like there. Texas is going to be tough at home. I think Tennessee and LSU are both going to give them serious games. I don't know. I think there are four toss-up games on the schedule. They're not going to lose all four, but will Bama fans be okay with a 10-2 regular season again? Like, what does that look like?
They definitely won't. They are not okay with 10-2, and that's what makes their position different because obviously they're Alabama, and they're going to be a really, really good team next year, but they're not into being really, really good teams. They're not Tennessee, okay? They're trying to win national championships.
Wow. We were almost done with the pod before one final shot at the Tennessee Volunteers. But I'll give it to you because you're not watching Georgia sports for a while. You're not watching. You got nothing on
Hey, I'm watching Ronald Acuna and the gang tee it up tomorrow, sir. Or today if you're listening to this today. Podcast.
What time is first pitch tomorrow for the Braves?
I want to. It's a day game for sure. I want to say it's like it might be 1 o'clock.
Okay, there you go. Are you gonna radio it? Are you gonna watch it? Are you gonna? How is that gonna work for you?
Oh, I'll be tuned in. Oh, you don't worry about me, sir. Yeah, 105 at Washington.
There you go. Patrick Corbin, I think versus Max Fried. If I remember,
Patrick Corbin is the opening day starter.
I'm pretty certain. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I'm pretty sure because you know they have those like inning like minimum qualifiers to qualify for you know season leaders. I'm not 100% sure he finished it, but I think at one point Patrick Corbin was literally the worst starting pitcher in the major leagues last year with like a minimum qualifying innings.
It's sad because he was so good for a long time. Injuries just it's bad. It's bad right now for Corbs, and the Nationals are going to be awful. Well, Matt Green, this was fun. I like doing this. Where are we going to go next? Do we do Big Ten? Big Ten East next? Big Ten West? Big Ten Legends? Big Ten
The Big Conquerors? Ten Leaders Division?
Yeah. I think we should do the Big Ten next. Next big conference.
Yeah, man.
Conference.
Let's do it.
All right, Matt Green, always a pleasure. I'll talk to you next week.
Yes, sir.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.